Welcome to the Jewish Theological Seminary, JTS. My name is Eitan Fishbein, associate professor of Jewish thought, and my field is Jewish mysticism, which is fitting to tonight's topic. And I'll be playing the part of David Kramer tonight. Do with that what you will. but it's really a special pleasure, and I'll get to why this is such a remarkable evening, and why we have such a special guest with us momentarily. But just to first frame for you, first of all, I just realized that I'm fairly certain that this actually was at least one of the rooms that the Heschels and others prayed in quite regularly back in the day. This was one of the synagogue rooms.
Not the chapel, do you know?
It was also Stein Chapel, but originally I believe that many, at least on Saturday mornings, many of them were here. So you can channel Heschel's Kavana, I think, perhaps a little bit that way. This wonderful evening and talk is part of a series, part of an ongoing program sponsored by the Library of JTS, of the Jewish Theological Seminary. The librarian is Professor David Kramer, my colleague, entirely possible by Mr. Hector Guzman, of course, also, assistant to Professor Kramer. And so we're really delighted, first of all, we're really delighted that you're here, and thank you for coming out, and also wanted to tell you about a couple of other upcoming events that are part of this ongoing series, where the Library of JTS makes it a priority to try to bring books of Jewish interest and contributions to Jewish literary culture to the broader Jewish community in the area. And so that's been for quite a number of years really a really wonderful program, I think, that's been developed here under Professor Kramer's leadership. And we're so happy that this brings Professor Kaplan to us tonight. So among a couple of the other upcoming events, on Wednesday, January 22nd at 7:30, we have Voices from the Warsaw Ghetto, Writing Our History, which is edited with an introduction by David Roskies, who some of you may know, also a professor here. And also on Tuesday, February 25th, Professor Kramer, David Kramer, will be discussing his new book, A History of the Talmud. So it's a special personal pleasure for me, in addition to a professional pleasure, to be able to help moderate and to introduce Professor Edward Kaplan tonight, both because of our longstanding deep family connection and friendship, and also because Professor Kaplan was my teacher back in the day, many moons ago at Brandeis University, and it's really quite an honor. And I also, in addition, by the way, in terms of spaces and times and the convergence of space and time and all of those good things, I've also been on my mind for some time that my office, which is up on the sixth floor of Unterberg, is right across the way from Heschel's old office, and I often think about that. And down the hall, I believe, was Mordechai Kaplan's old office, if I'm not mistaken. Professor Skelt can correct me if I'm wrong, but we imagine all these conversations of old happening. So that's also a very special thing. And also my own PhD advisor, my own teacher, Arthur Green, was also a close student of Heschel's. When he was a rabbinical student here at JTS, and so there's a special aspect of that for me as well. But I really want to turn our attention to tonight's very special event, which is celebrating and giving us insight into and a chance to engage with and hear from Professor Kaplan about this new one volume biography of Abraham Joshua Heschel, Mind, Heart, and Soul, published by JPS, the Jewish Publication Society. Hi, Rabbi Schwartz.
It's wonderful.
And we're really thrilled that it brings Professor Kaplan here tonight. So let me give you a little bit of a formal intro now that I've given you the casual intro. Ed K. Kaplan is Kaiserman Professor in the Humanities Emeritus at Brandeis University, where he has taught courses on French and comparative literature and religious studies since 1978. He was the founding chair of the program in religious studies. In addition to books, articles, and extensive teaching in French literature, Professor Kaplan taught Mysticism and the Moral Life, Thomas Merton, Howard Thurman, Abraham Joshua Heschel, which I've actually kind of done a reincarnation of actually now at JTS, in some ways inspired by you, Ed. The dynamics of religious experience and Abraham Joshua Heschel, spirituality and action in the field of religious studies. He has published several essays on Martin Buber, Thomas Merton, Howard Thurman, and Abraham Joshua Heschel. Kaplan's first book on Heschel, Holiness in Words, A.J. Heschel's Poetics of Piety, published by SUNY Press, was published in French translation in 1999 and in Italian translation in 2009. Kaplan is the author of the first intellectual and cultural biography of Abraham Joshua Heschel. Volume 1, co-authored with the late Samuel Dresner, Abraham Joshua Heschel, Prophetic Witness, published by Yale University Press in 1998, was a finalist in the 1998 National Jewish Book Awards in the Jewish Scholarship category. And Kaplan's Volume 2, Spiritual Radical, Abraham Joshua Heschel in America, 1940 to 1972, was published in 2007, also by Yale, and was the winner of the National Jewish Book Award 2008. And Professor Kaplan published a one-volume biography of Heschel in French in 2016. In the United States, Abraham Joshua Heschel, Mind, Heart, and Soul, a one-volume biography, came out in November 2019 with the Jewish Publication Society of America. Professor Kaplan, Also, as you can tell from his bio, also has both a distinguished record of scholarship and teaching in French and comparative literature and religious studies, and also great, tremendous contributions to our understanding of the life and thought of Abraham Joshua Heschel. So I think, without any further ado, I would like to turn it over to Professor Kaplan, who will sit or stand as he pleases. I think maybe
start standing.
Start standing and shift as you wish. It's really a great honor to welcome Professor Ed Kaplan to JTL.
Thank you, Ed, for your time, for a very beautiful, heartfelt introduction. You omitted one thing that's very important, my commitment. You just completed, just published a magnificent book on the Zohar from a literary perspective.
It's good.
In any case, I want to welcome you, friends, colleagues, family. The whole Valentine Kaplan family is here. So we won't have any more contests of who has children around and grandchildren around. But our family, I'm very, very grateful for it. Okay, you're right. So, okay. Yeah, I think sometimes I have to pay attention if someone has to remind me to raise my voice, okay? So please, please don't be inhibited about that.
I'm in charge of technical services, too.
You're in charge of that, but if I don't pick up on you, please tell me, and I will do the very best I can to make it intelligible as well as hearable. So, let me begin with how I met Rabbi Heschel. I actually explained about that to a certain degree in the book that you have, if you have a book, or the book that we have on the screen, but it's also in the first two volumes. So, I'm in high school and college, not very much interested in Judaism. My father, Kibbe Kaplan, was a luminary, one of the luminaries of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, and the union, what's called Union of Reform Judaism, Social Action. So I had a lot of contact with liberal rabbis, a lot of ministers, black ministers, also other ethnic groups. But I didn't have any real anchoring in Judaism. I got interested in Hinduism through a professor I had met when I was in college. He was studying at the Harvard Divinity School. And Hinduism seemed to me extremely interesting intellectually. And it didn't touch me deeply enough to think of converting, but my father was afraid that I would jump ship and become a Hindu. Could be worse. So, my father was a good friend of Martin Luther King Jr. He must have complained to Reverend King about his son. Well, King said, you know, I know a rabbi who's considered to be a mystic. His name is Abraham Joshua Heschel. So my father, being an action person, immediately took out his little notebook and wrote to Heschel and asked him to send me some of his books. Well, I read Man Is Not Alone. I was overthrown with pleasure and inspiration at that book. And then I got to meet him in his office. Well, first of all, I was afraid when I read the book, Man Is Not Alone. It's too beautiful, really. How could I ever have anything to do with that author? Well, here I was in Heschel's smoky office. I get no more cigars on your sixth floor, right? Hey, Tommy.
Just the traces.
Traces of cigars, the sacramental traces. So Heschel's on the phone, long distance. Remember long distance? And it's something about a demonstration. It's 1965, and I was working very hard for the PhD in French, but I was pulled by events. So, but in any case, Heschel said, well, what do you do at Columbia? I said, well, I was embarrassed because I said, I'm studying French literature. But what is a good Jewish boy from Boston doing, spending his life studying French literature? Ridiculous. Oh, he said, what in particular? He said, well, French literature is the richest language in the world. I said, I thought German was. You know. And he said, no, French literature. What specifically are you interested in? I said, I'm interested in poetry. So ashamed. He said, that's very important work. And I said, no one in my graduate program has ever told me that work is that important. Okay. So what happened? That 2-hour session with Heschel changed my life. Changed my life because I discovered for the first time a Jewish writer who conveyed to me the presence of God. You gotta raise your hand, but Buber. There is a chapter on Buber in the book. You don't have to worry about it. But it's a very different approach. It's very similar in the sense that his categories, the dialogical categories, are in common. It was really one part of the lingua franca of that form of European humanism, but somehow Heschel recognized something in me, and he would invite me to take walks with him on Shabbat afternoon. One of the questions he asked me, why don't you go to shul? Because I didn't go to shul. I said, well, it's too boring. He said, that's the problem. And poetry is one way of approaching that problem. What does that mean? Just in parentheses, it means that language is not only denotative or pointing to concrete empirical reality, but language takes us to a different plane of perception, you see. And so that was my way of entering, let's say, a community of religious thinking, or attempts at religious thinking. And it did not, I don't want to digress, but the French stuff is related to that. It's a way of being, seeking God without necessarily hearing to the ideology and the basic beliefs of Jewish tradition, let's say. So I met Heschel because Heschel heard of Kitty Kaplan, because Heschel was involved in civil rights. And so through Heschel, I would say, I returned to Judaism. Imperfectly, of course, but nevertheless, it really turned me into a different person. Different person with a more intense understanding, more intense curiosity, and also a different readings and different ways of seeking out the spiritual dimension. The spiritual dimension of all traditions. For me, Heschel was a lyrical writer whose vivid philosophy of religion, man is not alone, enthralled me. I hope I had found a Jewish writer who convincingly evoked in me an experience of the divine presence. For my entire academic career, I remain fascinated by the relationship between the ethical, the aesthetic, and the religious dimensions of human experience, to borrow Kierkegaard's terminology. So this kind of work, you know, you kind of go over and over the years and decades of your life trying to find the formula that really liberates people, you see, and communicates. Well, let's go back to May 1970, soon after the famous or infamous revolutions at Columbia University. So I'm working on general exams. Rachel is here, did I see you?
Yeah.
There she is. Rachel and I and another student, graduate student, study together for the generals. Okay? So see where it brings you. It's wonderful. My vocation as a professor and scholar of French literature went hand in hand with religious studies. I completed a doctoral dissertation on nature books of the French historian Jules Michelet, died in 1974. Michelet was a visionary whose prophetic ambition was to evoke in vibrant, fervent prose the integral life of the French people, the vote. Part of Michelet's ideology was his claim as artist historian, called himself an artist historian, was to give voices to those whose voices were silenced. So what could be more poignant and more relevant and more concrete if you study not a biography of Abraham Joshua Heschel, especially if you're doing research on that, you see. So with each person that I studied in this book, I kind of had a relationship with them. And you know, many of my sources were in languages that I did not have great ability training in, German, Yiddish, Russian, Polish. But with each person struggling to make a way in the Europe before Hitler, and what happened to these people during the Hitler period and after, reminds me that I had a responsibility to these people to have given a speaking voice. You see, so that's, if anything, literature and scholarship helps us accomplish that resurrection of the integral life of the past. So let's fast forward 20 years. 1987. At his initiative, the late Rabbi Samuel Dresner, who passed away in 2000, invited me to use his extensive personal Heschel archive to write the first comprehensive intellectual and cultural biography of Heschel. Well, actually, at the beginning, neither of us had that ambition. I thought it would be a couple of years, big deal. I was wrong, of course. The result of this overwhelming and exalting 20-year-long labor of research and writing was the authoritative two-volume biography published by the University of Yale Press, which we've already mentioned. Abraham Heschel's life and writings give voice to the multiple Jewish cultures he had absorbed before the Holocaust. Okay, so here's another, we call it obstacle, when you're studying a field. And I didn't have a decent Jewish education, but the Holocaust seemed to be a kind of pivot point on people's interpretation of reality. Well, Heschel was at the same time a Hasidic Jew from Warsaw, a Yiddish speaking poet, a modern German Judaic scholar of the Talmud, Maimonides, and of course the Hebrew prophets. Heschel's doctoral thesis was a phenomenological analysis of prophetic consciousness, not knowledge, just a fancy word for a study of consciousness. This was a certain kind of method. Trained as a European academic humanist, Heschel urged readers to open their mind, cultivate a sense of radical amazement in order to receive divine revelation. Okay? Divine revelation. So, on one hand, we have inspiration, which doesn't have necessarily have any specific theological content for it. But there's also a sense of both of boundaries and of openings. So that's that trilogy from Kierkegaard, the aesthetic, the ethical, and the religious, that helps us think about those forms of action in the world. Heschel himself had absorbed all Jewish worlds. He now became a true neo-Hasidic Rebbe of the 20th century. So let's look at slide 2, shall we? Is that it? No, slide 1. The books we saw before were books in my book. Don't worry about it, we're not that important. So I'll just pass over the titles of these, it's not that important. But I noticed that there's a certain hedonistic pattern here. I write the book in English, it's translated into French, and it's translated in Italian. Think of all the good meals.
They're working on the technical.
Okay, great. So that's what you get when you introduce the English books. So the book we welcome today, Abraham Heschel, Mind, Heart, Soul, published this November by the Jewish Publication Society, is a painstaking abridgment of the two-volume biography of Heschel, published by the Yale University Press. First volume came out in 1998. Heschel's birth and education in Europe before the Second World War, and then Abraham Heschel, Prophetic Witness, 1907-1940, was written with a collaboration with Samuel P. Dresner. This is volume 1. 9 years later, in 2007, Rabbi Dresner's untimely death in the year 2000, I published Spiritual Radical, Abraham Joshua Heschel in America, second volume of the biography. I trace how this penniless immigrant reinvented himself and truly became Heschel, a living amalgam of traditional texts in a pluralistic idiom, combining poetry, philosophical analysis, accompanied by flashes of fervent celebration of faith. Heschel himself had absorbed all Jewish cultures. The present volume is an abridgment of the more than 1,000 pages of the two volumes. I did not choose this task with undue pressure, without enough undue pressure. How would I dare reduce my two volumes in size more than 500 pages? A scholar of Polish history, so I thought I was through with it. not to prize, but you know, I was in Paris, I gave a lecture on Heschel, a French historian of Polish history, French historian of Polish history, Kirby speak, and he said, you have to publish your biography of Heschel in France. I said, it's great, you want to buy it? He said, that's no problem. C'est un disponible. Absolutely obligatory. This book is so important. So I thought, oh, what the hell? You think it's important? I'll do that. And how did it I found a wonderful former student of mine, Hadassah Margolis, who helped me edit these books. And she is a remarkable person in her understanding and practice of Judaism and as a human being. So thank you. That's it. It's really a joy to work with you. With the fear and trembling, I contemplated the necessary surgery of my beloved two wives. I felt like Abraham leading his son Isaac on Mount Moriah. How to sacrifice the integrity of my two volumes. My angel was Hadassah Margolis, and she not only expressed a sensitive understanding of Judaism and the Heschel, but of yours truly, what I call the author's vulnerabilities. Result took about two more years. I worked with the prestigious translator John E. Jackson, member of the Bonne Foi Baudelaire Axis, group of people that love the same poets in France. The single volume in French, Avant Georges Heschel, in Biographie, was published by Honoré Champion in Paris and Geneva in 2016. Are we finished with that? No way. 2015, I retired from Brandeis University after 36 years of teaching there. But the state of the original abridgment in English was on my mind. Inspired by Rabbi Barry Schwartz, this CPS, Jewish Publication Society director, and working closely with Joy Weinberg, the JPS managing editor, and with the help of Hadassah Margolis, a devoted editorial assistant, Vina Kuti, who produced this book, a reader-friendly single-volume Heschel biography, worthy of the distinguished list of the Jewish Publication Society. Yes. Okay, so we're going to try to advance a little here. Yeah, I have a yeah, just keep an eye on the time.
We're all good.
I'll just take this. Excuse me for being so relaxed, but I'm really happy to be with you guys. If you get us stroll, that's my son Aaron. That's called a cameo appearance. The geography of Heschel's American life can be condensed right here in the upper west side of Manhattan. A brief walk around these streets and Broadway makes this book event at ATS a personal milestone for me as well. We begin our stroll at Columbia University, where I earned a PhD in French and Romance philology, simple fancy for French literature. Down Broadway, the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, where I first met Heschel. I learned from Heschel how poetry and prayer can lead to action. Heschel would help me recenter my quest for God to God's quest for the human being. Forever grateful to Heschel, I committed myself to confront my personal and intellectual perplexities through Judaism. Across Broadway was and remains the Liberal Protestant Union Theological Seminary, where Heschel found a spiritual activist community. A visiting professor at Union Seminary, Heschel achieved renown for interfaith projects, especially during the Second Vatican Council. Our spiritual eternity on the Upper West Side ends at a small Catholic church, Corpus Christi, on West 121st Street, where the Trappist monk and writer Thomas Merton was baptized on November 16, 1938. Thomas Merton graduated from Columbia University before he converted to Catholicism and became a Trappist monk. Yeah. Yes, I'll do that. Okay. Oh, I say sure. Yes. I'm going to read some texts with you now, but I'll finish up with saying about Christianity and spirituality. After almost 20 years, Merton and Heschel became correspondents. Yes, thank you. After 20 years, Merton and Heschel began corresponding, and then shared a delightful and serious evening at the Abbey of Gethsemane under the shadow of Vatican, the Second Vatican Council. Merton died absurdly on December 10, 1968, accidentally electrocuted by a faulty plug in Bangkok at a conference on the renewal of monasticism. So tonight, as we celebrate the life and works of Abraham Joshua Heschel, we mark the 51st yahrzeit of Thomas Merton. In the remainder of the evening, I will read passages from J.H. Mind, Heart, Soul, excerpts that evoke important Heschel's historical and personal moments, tracing how his personality develops and his writing evokes his passion for truth. We will attempt to attune our readings to Heschel's sensitivity to the complexities of the 20th century, the century of two world wars, of catastrophic horror, cataclysmic horror, marvels, which finally, mercifully, came to a close. We now face the 21st century. But you know, I read in the New York Times this morning, quotation, and this is, answers the question, why do we need Heschel? If one answers the question, why do we need Heschel? I'm quoting from the New York Times. There are days in Washington when it feels that the truth itself is on trial. There are days in Washington, D.C., when it feels like the truth itself is on trial. Heschel's final book was called A Passion for Truth, and he considered lying as a fundamental cause of evil. And I think this is very interesting. It's been said a little less. He wants us to be attentive. He wants us to be on the alert. to start with the preface? Do you have a picture? No? Okay. So Heschel is a mystic. Or how do you know a person is a mystic? What is a mystic anyway? Okay. So the fundamental definition that I work with is a person who believes that he or she has contacted God directly, or encountered God directly. That if God is not a projection of human thought or human imagination, but there are analogies. That's why the aesthetic, the ethical, and the religious seem to clarify things for me. Why am I fascinated by this? Probably because I don't have it. Or at least not adequately. That's why I started writing on these issues, why I taught a course at Brandeis, and before that at Amherst College, in the five college group mystics are convinced that they have experienced the living God beyond images, beyond ideas. Heschel was steadfast in his trust in the God of justice and compassion. How can many of us who do not share that certainty live and think in accord with foundational religious teachings, Jewish or otherwise? My strategy has been to study the mystic's life. Okay? So it's not a, you know, it's not revelation yet, but there is a sense that if you go in the right direction, you will meet, you will achieve the certainty of God's reality. I'm going to talk about his influences in Warsaw from a... Okay. He had a mentor in Warsaw, Fischer Schneerson, belonged to the Chabad dynasty, was a psychiatrist and also a writer in Hebrew and Yiddish. And he understood that Heschel needed higher education outside of the walls of the Jewish Hasidic culture that he was part of. In Berlin, he found a professor not affiliated with the university, but who had studied with the major professors of the time, David Koigen. Koigen and Schneerson knew each other, and they both ended up in Berlin eventually, and realized that in order to get into a university in Germany or in Poland, you had to take an examination, Abitur, but that you could qualify, you had to qualify by knowing the curriculum of Poland and Germany. So you had to study Latin, math, history, philosophy. And eventually understood that the temptations of the joys and the pleasures of 20th century aesthetic life is not enough. I'll read you a passage from a lecture that he gave in 1953 for Reform rabbis. In those months in Berlin, I went through moments of profound bitterness, Heschel speaking, right? I felt very much alone with my own problems and anxieties. I walked alone in the evenings through the magnificent streets of Berlin. I admired the solidity of its architecture, the overwhelming drive and power of a dynamic civilization. Suddenly I noticed the sun had gone down. Evening had arrived, and this is a quotation, from what time may one recite the Shema in the evening? I had forgotten God, I had forgotten Sinai. I had forgotten that Sinai, that sunset is my business, that my task is to restore the world to the kingship of the Lord. So I began to utter the words of the evening prayer. Blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who by his word brings on the evenings. And Goethe's famous poem rang in my ear. Über allen Gipfeln ist Ruhe, where all the hilltops is quiet now. No, that was pagan thinking. To the pagan eye, the mystery of life is Ruhe, death, oblivion. To us Jews, there is meaning beyond the mystery. You should say, over all the hilltops, is the word of God. How grateful I am, Heschel goes on, now to translate this. This is kind of a parable of a Hasidic Ultra-Orthodox Jew who discovered the world and who understands that Judaism combines freedom of the secular world and the constraints of a halachic religion governed by divine commandment and divine judgments. How grateful I am to God that there is a duty to worship, a law to remind my distraught mind that it is time to think of God, time to disregard my ego, for at least a moment. It is much happiness, it is such happiness to belong to an order of the divine will. So that's a moment of turning, not of belief or faith, but attentiveness, you see, always on the way to go higher or fuller. Now, finished his PhD in 1933, his oral exams. He started writing articles in the Yiddish Wunderblatt, in Berlin, the community newspaper of Berlin. And this has been published now in the English translation, the Jewish Publication Society, In This Hour. It's a magnificent book. It's very interesting. It's not a difficult book, but he gives little biographies of rabbis of the Talmudic times in order to remind the German Jews that there's still hope, okay? And that there's a tradition that is valuable to them. What Heschel was doing was contributing to a cultural renaissance of Judaism among the German Jews who were not grounded on traditional knowledge. The term, you might hear the term Luftmensch. You're kind of floating around, you don't have anything to stand on, you see. And so Heschel was speaking to those people. Maybe put another way, he's speaking to me. I mean, gee, Luftmensch. I'm not ashamed of that, because I've gone a little beyond it. not excessively. Yeah, so it's okay. I had a quotation here from the chapter that deals with the publication of Man Is Not Alone and the reviews of his philosophy of Judaism, or actually philosophy of religion, is in the book. Now, when he came to the United States in 1940, he was preparing a, what I call a Jewish Summa Theologica, an embrace of all Jewish knowledge. And what he tries to do is to evoke those moments in which a person studies the religious text. And it's possible that that person will receive an insight, an insight that God is real. So I'm going to read this little passage. It begins with a theological assertion, and he develops in kind of poetic prose a intimacy between the divine and the human. And I'm quoting from Heschel. "For God is not always silent, and man is not always blind. His glory, God's glory, fills the world. God's spirit hovers above the waters. There are moments in which, to use a Talmudic phrase, heaven and earth kiss each other, in which there is a lifting of the veil at the horizon of the known, opening a vision of what is eternal in time. Some of us," and this is a very important statement, it's a statement of something that he believes, and it's very risky to have a kind of axiom that it may not be something that everyone would agree to. So he says, "Some of us have at least once experienced the momentous reality of God. Some of us have at least caught a glimpse of the beauty, peace, and power that flow through the souls of those who are devoted to him. The voice of Sinai goes on forever." And here he's quoting from the sources. "These words that the Lord spoke unto all your assembly in the mount, but in the midst of the fire and the cloud and of the thick darkness, with a great voice that goes on forever." With a great voice that goes on forever. And here's a voice that in italics. Okay? So, look, I'm trying to understand how to approach these experiences, these assertions, these powerful, inspirational acts of commitment. Poor guy, I'm sorry.
I love it.
You got a better back than I do, so. Continuous creation. Okay? That's a big issue for Jews. The possibility for prophetic inspiration is also a big thing. Because normal approach is to believe that prophecy is finished, and the divine inspiration that motivated the sages and other up through Maimonides, if you wish. Heschel wrote two major articles. One is on the Did Maimonides Seek Prophetic Inspiration? And the other one is called Prophetic Inspiration in the Middle Ages before Maimonides. Integrating intuition in sacred history, Heschel bore witness that the Holy Spirit, as I translate, Ruach HaKodesh, the prophetic inspiration, was still available. And then he has a long footnote, which I'm not going to read, that demonstrates that this is a common knowledge. So I'm going to try to take a little drink of water and find my place. All right, so you can breathe for just a couple of minutes. If I'd like to drink a little water and find my place.
Okay, good, that's fine.
So I think that now would be a great time to actually to open things up for some questions and comments and to open a dialogue with Professor Kaplan about his very important work on Heschel. So like to if you have a question, if you could raise your hand and when I call on you, you could stand up and say it loudly, and then we can have a bit of a dialogue. Professor Kaplan's eager to do it.
Oh, is that Jane?
Hi, Ed.
You don't mind if I say you're a cousin.
What?
You don't mind if I say a word?
No, I don't mind. I want to say I share your enthusiasm for Heschel, and Heschel, while he made it possible for you to find your way through Judaism and not convert, he is also the reason that I converted to Judaism. I'd like to know, I've read your book and I love it. How is Heschel regarded today by Jewish scholars? And what lasting, this is a bigger question maybe, what lasting impact do you think Heschel has had on the Jews of America, the Jews of the world?
Right. So the first question, repeat it again please, because I think...
The first question is, how is he regarded today by the Jewish academics?
Okay.
In the Jewish world.
That's right. So this is a very difficult question to answer. So you do, in a certain sense, you do it anecdotally. So I was in Lower East Side someplace with Gus's Pickles. Okay? And I wanted to buy a kibble. I was getting more observant. You know, when you start low, you don't get much. But nevertheless, I wanted a kibble. A kibble is a ceremonial garment you wear on Pesach, right? And I don't know if there are, and then you die, you're buried in the kibble. This is a pretty important thing. It's a fundamental thing. So I had a kibble. And then I went to buy a siddur. I won't tell you which son I was with. A siddur. And I said, by the way, do you have any books? What do you have by Abraham Joshua Heschel? So we don't carry that. and so I said, what do you mean? And he pointed to my son. Mainly, obviously this son didn't know Judaism. And it was a bad thing that we had to know Jews. Okay? So Heschel is not kosher enough for a certain orthodoxy. I got a letter several years ago from a reader. Thank you so much for your wonderful book. biography there in Joshua Heschel. I find myself tremendously insulated. I can't talk to anybody in my neighborhood about this. Okay? So there's some, you know, upper Orthodox person. Yes.
Thank you. In this week's Jewish Press, that newspaper,
yes, I remember.
There is a full-page article, and I hadn't seen it. It was mentioned on the front page, and I opened the paper and I had to see that issue. A full-page article, an interview with a scholar from Israel who wrote an article. It's an excerpt from his book, an Orthodox fellow, documenting how Professor Heschel was an Orthodox, you know, observant man his entire life. And that article was published without any, it was actually an interview with the editor of the paper.
Yeah, that's great. So it was a positive affirmation.
Very positive. And Hakira, the Journal of Orthodox Jewish Thought, published here in New York, has an entire feature in the current issue all about Professor Abraham Joshua.
An issue devoted to Heschel?
Yes.
Isn't that the name of the journal?
Hakira.
Hakira, is it in Hebrew?
I'll send it to you later.
Thank you very much.
In English.
Okay, so this is the way to answer the question. Okay, we're reflecting and seeing what kind of experiences we have.
About JTS? Do they revere Heschel?
It depends what decade you're talking about. Okay?
Now.
So, now I don't know. All I can say is that Arnie Eisen is considered by the world to be an expert on Heschel, and he is. He also met Heschel in his office. He also, and Heschel inspired Arnie Eisen. And so I think that the community, those of us who have contacted Heschel either through reading or for in person, that's increasing. It's a Heschel school, of course. Are you guys from Heschel School?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Stand up, please. Hey! Look at that. That's fantastic. Great. Thank you. You get the picture.
I can say also, it's actually been an interesting evolution, and that today I think, both in the conservative movement more broadly, but also specifically at JTS, right? Ironically, given how he was treated when he was here, Heschel is revered as a hero, right? As a kind of thought hero and spiritual hero. So it reflects this kind of very interesting turn of the movement's attitude, of JTS's attitude toward spirituality ways, right, and toward theology.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so somewhere I have this quotation. The bookshelves are stuffed with books on spirituality, and that's a great thing. So Heschel takes his place among those people who are seeking whatever spirituality is. It's a vague term, I know that. Okay? But it's a locus of reflection and for action. Yes.
I just wanted to mention Rabbi Hillman, who I studied with as an undergraduate here and who occupied Heschel's office.
Yeah, oh.
He had studied with both Heschel and Kaplan.
Is that Neil Gilman?
Yes.
Okay.
And I would say he was largely responsible for a lot of the positive growth for Heschel that's happened here. And the way he used to teach it, he used to say, I struggle with whether it's theology or poetry.
Yeah, that's right.
And that is also been a big influence.
Yeah, Professor Gilman also has a very interesting analysis of different ways of interpreting Judaism. So he's a really a great pedagogue as well as a wonderful teacher. So, yeah. Yes?
So a quick question. I think you said that, if I heard you correctly, Heschel finished his doctoral work in Berlin in the early 30s.
Yes.
Is this around the time that Bonhoeffer was there, too? Do you know if they crossed paths at all?
I don't know Bonhoeffer, what his dates are. Do you know specifically? Because he came to Union.
He came to Union, but yeah. He did his doctoral work in Berlin.
Yes.
In the 30s.
I'm afraid I don't know, but that would be a great topic. I think Heschel knew a lot more than we know even. And especially in non-Jewish sources. I mean, he knew everything in Judaism, which is a hell of a lot. I mean, it's really tremendous. Only, they call it the prodigy, really, starting very early from there. But actually, what Eitan is saying about the way people treated each other at Jewish Theological Seminary, Heschel was unhappy. But he was not treated with tremendous respect for reasons that are ideological in terms of the structure of the seminary in the 1930s and 40s and 50s. Mordechai Kaplan, the founder of Reconstructionism, developed a sociologically inflected or a sociological interpretation of Judaism as a civilization. But he's a great teacher, and he influenced a lot of students, rabbis, from conservative movement. It also was a way, and this I write about a bit in the book, how it provided an approach to Judaism that did not require you to believe in God. Okay? And there's some people might be angry with it. We may be saying that, but let's take it as a working hypothesis. Okay? Heschel lived and wrote in the United States in a period that was insensitive to spiritual depths. So let's look, he comes to the United States in 1940, and he goes to the Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, and that institution, which I was a grown up in, was rationalistic, anti-Zionist, and disrespectful of certain, of many of the traditional rules and interpretations. Heschel suffered from that, and he gathered around him, or actually they gathered, they did on at his initiative, their initiative rather, the Reformed rabbinical students, appreciated Heschel's worship, doctrine, but they had a hard time with him because he was still kind of a greenhorn. Jewish learned, so that most of the students that came to the Reformed Seminary lacked the basic Jewish knowledge that the students who applied to Jewish Theological Seminary worked with. Okay, I lost the train of thought. Yes.
You mentioned in your book that in his youth he had a relationship with Schneerson.
Yes.
The Lubavitcher Rebbe.
Yeah.
Who had a great influence once he came to America.
Yes.
Did they maintain that contact during the time that both of them were important figures?
I don't. My research has not given me satisfactory knowledge of Schneerson and Heschel in the same circle.
Well, they obviously weren't in the same circle.
They were not. No, not really, though Fischer Schneerson was, you know,
a
Bhadnik. Yeah.
He was a mystic.
No.
Oh, well, I'm trying to figure.
Is
that the same one? No. Okay.
Say it out loud.
Okay,
Shul
was not the
Resh.
I'm sorry.
So, could you just clarify your question?
Well, he talks about the relationship with Schneerson in Berlin.
That's Fischl.
Oh, yes, that's mine.
Well, the Schneerson you're talking about is Menachem Mendel Schneerson, right?
That was his son.
No. So this is totally different. That's to do with the Chabad dynasty.
Yeah, the only person I dare write about in the biography is the one who was the psychiatrist.
Let's take one more question or comment, and that way we can have a student from the Heschel School, Tali 11. Was that embarrassing enough, Talia?
It could be.
Okay.
So, as a student today at an educational institution that steeps itself in Heschel's knowledge, what do you think is the most important takeaway for young people today from Heschel's teachings?
So, what is the most important takeaway from Heschel's teachings for young people today, Professor Kaplan?
I think it's the connection between inner life and ethical action that excessive focus on the inner life really can lead very easily toward indifference or despair. What can I do? There's nothing that I can really do. But that presupposes the vision of what it means to be human as being individualistic. On the other hand, if you don't have enough inner life, you know, it's kind of like a bad itch. You can't really deal with the conflicts in the world and the conflicts of world crisis. You know, like this morning's New York Times and the previous years of the New York Times before that. So you have to balance inwardness as a way of knowing who you are, and at the same time feel impelled to act. You see? So there's a kind of va-et-vient, or a kind of struggle between similar and different ways of seeing oneself in the world. So let's say, try to say it briefly. For the young students who learn something about Judaism, build on that knowledge. The responses to personal and historical situations like those faced by Reb Joshua Heschel. So here's a little guy who's a genius and he's 6, 7, 8 years old. He's already studying the Talmud. And he's going to be a Hasidic Rebbe. Born in a neighborhood in Warsaw. You know, he was having a good time. Father died. When he was 10, right before he was 10 years old. So already reality imposed itself upon the young Abraham Joshua Heschel. Sorry. And then in Warsaw, he learned about Jewish secularism. And in Berlin, he learned about modern German Jewish scholarship. My answer isn't sufficient. Ask it again.
I think that was beautiful, Professor Kaplan. Thank you, and really is one of the powerful legacies of Heschel. So thank you so much. It really is really a very unique and special opportunity to learn from one of the world's leading experts on Abraham Joshua Heschel and his life. And it's really an honor to have you here at this place that Heschel spent so many years of his life and influenced so many people at. So we're really just delighted to have hosted this event as part of the JTS Library Book Talks, and we are also lucky to have. It looks like numerous copies of the book that Professor Kaplan will be happy to sign and inscribe for you and sell to you. And so I encourage you to come and avail yourself of this great opportunity and to ask personal questions of Professor Kaplan and to get your copy of Abraham Joshua Heschel. And I don't even get a commission. Do I, Barry? So thank you so much, and thank you for coming out to JTS for the JTS Library Book Talk.